Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Happy Thursday. So glad you're with me this morning. Bill Arnold here behind the microphone with Rebecca Maxwell at the board, Paul Perreault in the newsroom. And I'm already worried about our friends in Hartford. They're buried under much snow from that nor'easter. They're cleaning up after the storm that hit. Hartford had 7 inches of snow. If you are in Hartford this morning and want to call and give me the report, I would love to hear from you. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Being a Minnesota guy, I'm pretty savvy to storms, so you're going to have to work hard to impress with 7 inches of snow, but we'd love to hear from you. That would be great. In Pasadena, California, there is a fast food flipping robot that has apparently become too popular. Flippy is a $100,000 robot that can cook on the grill at a Pasadena-based restaurant. It can make about 2,000 burgers a day, but once the word got out, demand at the restaurant surged. Crowds just showed up to come take a look at Flippy. So they shut it off for the weekend. It's going to be back up and running on Monday. Meanwhile, in other news, Skippy, the 19-year-old kid who also has the same job, is visibly shaken. Good luck to Skippy. All right, we've got Ben Johnson with us this morning from the Acton Institute. We're going to talk to him about tariffs, of which I know nothing. So Ben will hopefully fill in the blanks for me and perhaps many of you, because it's all a little confusing when it comes to understanding tariffs. Be back in a minute with Ben Johnson. It's 6 minutes after the hour. It is 7 minutes after the hour. Good morning. So glad you're with me this morning. Ben Johnson is the senior editor of the Acton Institute, regular guest of the Early Morning Late Show, and he's with us this morning. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. How are you doing, Bill?
I'm good. Okay, this tariff news story is big news, and I don't know what the deal is with it. I mean, I'm very confused, so I would love for you to help sort this out for me.
Well, there's a good reason you're confused, and that's because the policy, according to most experts, is still in flux.
Okay.
They haven't determined exactly what's going to happen just yet. So, now, here are the details as we have them right now. According to the trade representative who was dispensing this on Fox Business last night, is that the Trump administration is going to impose a 25% tariff on imported steel and a 10% tariff on aluminum. So I guess the first thing to do would be to back up and say, what's a tariff?
Mm-hmm.
And why would I care?
Right.
A tariff is when someone exports goods from another country into our country, we sometimes tax those. It's sometimes referred to as an import tax. So we'll raise the price of foreign goods in order to make them cost more. In this case, again, 25% for steel, 10% for aluminum. And the way that Trump did this is a little bit legally dodgy, let's say it that way. Typically, this sort of thing would be handled by Congress. You know, trade, according to the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, is very clearly the purview of Congress. That's the way the founders intended it. But Congress has given up so much of its authority to the executive branch on so many other areas throughout its history. This is another one. In the 1960s, there was a bill called the Trade Expansion Act, which gave the president the right to impose tariffs if he felt that it was necessary to preserve national security. And so Trump has said the U.S. steel industry is in trouble and we have to preserve it for reasons of national security. This sounds pretty dubious, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, 70% of the U.S. market is controlled by the U.S. steel industry. So the U.S. steel industry is not where it was at its peak, but steel consumption isn't where it was at its peak either. You know, cars are not made of steel as much as they were when you and I were kids.
Mm-hmm.
Those were great cars, but we've come up with things that are a little bit less deadly now,
right,
rather than steel. So So, you know, the president has sort of taken this upon himself, but it's pretty questionable that this is going to really affect national security. The big controversy here is the fact that it's pretty clear China has been engaging in what's called overcapacity, which is a big, boring economic term. Now that I put your listeners to sleep, let me see if we can wake them up a little
okay.
bit. What that means is that they've been producing much more than the market would typically call for over time, and that's lowered the cost and given them an economic edge. So we're going to apply this 25% steel tariff against every country that that exports steel to the U.S. Now, the trouble is China isn't in the top 10. It's number 11. The number one is Canada. You have countries like South Korea, Mexico, Turkey, Japan, Germany, and Taiwan in the top 10, and this could affect all of them. According to the most recent information, there'll be carve-outs for Canada and Mexico for about 1 month while we renegotiate NAFTA. But essentially what we're doing is punishing U.S. allies in order to get at the 2% of the market that's controlled by China.
Interesting. Now, does China dump some of their steel and aluminum into Canada and Mexico, and then Canada and Mexico tack a little something on, you know, for the effort, you know, and then make a little bit of money that way?
There have been allegations to that effect, and I think that they're probably well-founded. So there have been some questions. There's no question China's a dubious actor at best when it comes to international trade of all sorts. But this is like, you know, hitting a fly with a sledgehammer.
Okay.
And this is way too much for what is necessary. And this has caused a rift between ourselves and some of our closest allies. You know, the head of the EU Trade Commission said, we can't see how the EU, who are friends and allies of NATO, can be a threat to U.S. security. That doesn't make any sense. Why are you imposing tariffs against us? If your big concern is national security, why would you punish someone who we are members of NATO and we are duty-bound to protect one another?
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, I mentioned Taiwan actually exports more steel to the United States than China. For the longest time, we had a policy that we would support Taiwan against China, but we're actually hurting Taiwan more than we're hurting China with these tariffs. So make sense of that. Riddle me that, Batman.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, now, the top economic advisor, Gary Cohn, left the White House, really, didn't he, in the wake of this? Or is he saying, look, I did my tax bill, so now I want to go?
Well, in Washington, you can never tell exactly where the truth begins and the press the press release ends.
Mm-hmm.
So you're never exactly sure which of those is accurate. But he is leaving his post as an advisor to Trump on the economy, and he's been well known as someone who supports free trade from Goldman Sachs. So there's never been a question about where he stands on this, and apparently he feels very strongly about it. Most of Trump's advisors advised him against this move. It's really only two, Wilbur Ross and Peter Navarro. Wilbur Ross, head of the Commerce Secretary, Peter Navarro, a very influential advisor to the president on economic affairs, and well known to be in favor of tariffs, who are in favor of this. So you have this policy that's driving a wedge between the United States and our allies, you know, in the West, people we are supposed to be helping. But then there's the question of what the economic impact will be at home. 16 times as many people are employed in industries that buy steel as are employed by industries that make steel.
Mm-hmm.
So when you raise the cost, it hurts them, and it hurts them disproportionately to the ones who are being preserved. This was done once before in 2002. George W. Bush was going to allow this to occur for a three-year period, put a 20-25% tariff on all imported steel at that time. And he called it off after a year and a half, halfway through, because his own International Trade Commission had found it had a modest but negative impact on the U.S. economy. That was his official policy. The Peterson Institute found it cost $400,000 for every job that was saved.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell someone is, and those jobs did not pay $400,000 a piece to work in a steel mill, I assure you. So yeah, this was a net negative to the economy overall. He called it off, and yet here we are some 16 years later walking down the same road.
Yeah. Ben, the talk of tariffs has made the stock market quite jittery.
Yes, and you've seen the stock market has already reacted to this. Of course, when it comes to doing business, you don't just look at how things are doing today or what the current picture is. The most important thing for business is stability. And they see that the president here is talking about a great note of instability when it comes to two of our closest allies, Canada and Mexico. We have an international free trade pact that we have honored for 25 years, essentially, with both of them. And he's saying that unless they change the terms of that, he's going to impose tariffs that break not only NAFTA rules, but possibly WTO rules as well. So there's a tremendous amount of instability. If you can't tell if someone's going to honor the commitment that they make to you, that's a real net negative.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what you're going to see is that people, instead of investing in the United States, are going to invest elsewhere. Matter of fact, one of the places that's hit by this has national security detriments as well. It's done in the name of national security, but the Prime Minister of South Korea has already said the market is so unstable in the United States. There's so much instability in the U.S. market. Frankly, Donald Trump's a little bit unpredictable on trade policy. Instead of selling our steel to the United States, we're going to start selling to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see this. If this is done in the name of advancing national security, it backfired in the most unintended but entirely foreseeable and rational way.
All right, Ben, let me take a break. When we come back, I'll make some more blanket statements and I'll let you make sense of them, all right?
That sounds perfect.
And I also want to get a theme song for you. I think you're a theme song worthy. So start thinking of a theme song, your own walk-up music. I'm talking to Ben Johnson from the Acton Institute. It's 16 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 19 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Ben Johnson, senior editor of the Acton Institute. In the New York Times, it said more than 100 Republican lawmakers implored President Trump to drop plans for stiff and sweeping steel and aluminum tariffs as the White House prepared to formalize the measures on Thursday afternoon. Ben, help us again just understand just the ramifications of this policy as me, a consumer living in Minnesota.
Sure. When you go to your local market, you're going to have a lot of things you buy that use either steel or aluminum. Probably if you went down to your kitchen, you would find aluminum cans there.
Yes.
I'm thinking of that scene in The Jerk with Steve Martin where he's shooting up the cans. And he says, he hates these cans.
Navin Johnson, one of my heroes.
Yeah. Navin Johnson, my namesake.
And I know.
Probably distant cousin.
Yeah.
And IQ equal. But when it comes to someone who would impose a tariff on those cans, doesn't usually hit the cans, they hit the people who consume them.
Mm-hmm.
So your costs are going to go up, the cost of the people who make those cans are going to go up,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to pass that on to you. That's the way that it always works. When business has an increased burden, it gets passed on in the form of higher prices to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go to the market, it's going to cost you more, which means either you buy less or you have to buy proportionally, you buy a different variety. And some people call these, instead of tariffs, they call them import taxes. Really, a tariff is sort of a tax, and it's not paid by the foreign producer. It's paid by the consumer who purchases the products that they make, and they have to pay more for them.
So certain companies like people that produce soup and canned vegetables and things, they're going to be taken at the hardest, I would imagine.
They will, and they will pass those right on to the consumer. So when it comes to things like canned vegetables, of course, you think of the price of food going up, and I think that's probably the most immoral sort of way that we could possibly hurt consumers, because that disproportionately affects poor people, people who are just struggling to get by. When you increase the cost of staples and the necessities of life,
mm-hmm.
Things like food, I think that that's the cruelest kind of thing you can increase. Also, of course, the price of cars will go up. So that's a big net negative. And
that's
of
true.
Course, right now, the president has announced this $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan. Well, what do you use a lot of in infrastructure?
Steel.
What kind of beams do you use?
Yep, steel.
Steel beams.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to go up too.
Okay, let's go from a consumer perspective to more of a worldwide perspective. The question, Ben, is maybe why should Christians even be concerned about things like tariffs and market restrictions from a worldwide perspective?
From a global perspective, as we say, this hurts everyone who's involved. It hurts consumers, and I think the main reason for Christians to be concerned about the domestic impact is because it falls disproportionately on people who are just about making it, people who are struggling very hard in order to pay the food bill, or they need a new car and they've just saved up enough, and now the price is going to go up because of these tariffs. So it disproportionately hurts the poor, and that's something that Jesus was very much concerned about. So that's one thing. The life of the poor is difficult enough, but when bad economic policy comes along, when we make it harder unnecessarily, I think that there's a cost to be paid for that, and someone has to answer for it, both in here on earth and in an eternal sense as well. And then this introduces friction needlessly with our allies, as we were just saying, with the United States and the EU. When it comes to this, we speak about a trade war, and right now they're using the language of war on this. People in the EU, the EU trade representative has said there will be a, quote, proportionate response, which is what the Israeli Defense Force says when a Palestinian engages in terrorism. So this is the sort of way that it's being interpreted, is that this is sort of a war, and now we're back and forth in a war. So it needlessly introduces friction. Jesus Christ came to bring peace as much as humanly possible, and those who are his children will be the peacemakers. They will be called the sons of God. And I think that those are two important aspects of it. And then thirdly, we should care about prosperity in general. When people prosper economically, provided that they are spiritually wise and follow the principles of Scripture, it helps them to flourish in the ways that they need to. When there's more money, that means there's more money for the church, there's more money for charity, there's more money for everything that needs to be done, and there are more products, and there's a greater abundance at the service of Christ's kingdom.
Mm-hmm. All right, not to get off the subject, but I do want to change subjects before we wrap up our time this morning. And I have a question for you on just what's going on in North Korea. Is there any progress, Ben? Are they actually willing to give up their nuclear pursuit?
I don't think North Korea will ever give up their nuclear pursuit. They've learned too much from U.S. foreign policy. We walked down the same route with Libya during the Bush years. Libya gave up its WMD and its programs, all of its programs for the most destructive weapons in the world, with the assurance that we would never topple the regime. President Bush was on his way out. President Obama came in. We immediately toppled Gaddafi. We had pictures of his body being dragged through the street. Now ISIS is in charge of another country.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, they saw the United States doesn't keep its word. Unfortunately, not all of our international agreements are honored. And number two, the only way to be safe in this world is to have a nuclear weapon. They've been prioritizing that above everything else, including the lives of millions of starving North Koreans. I don't think you're going to see a U-turn now.
And it's safe to say you can never trust anything that North Korea says.
Yes, unless you're MSNBC.
Oh, Ben, you made
charming.
You've already made my day. Just anyone who makes a Navin Johnson reference makes my day. So thank you so much. And try to figure out what walk-up music you want for your when you come on the show. I want you to have your own walk-up music.
Well, that's far too kind. I feel like the world's flabbiest professional wrestler. Thank you.
They're a very important part of those wrestling matches. You know, the one that you know, I think that guy's going to lose for sure. All right, Ben, thanks so much. It's 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a very short break and go to Ken Davis, and then we're going to talk to Kim Cotola at about 20 minutes till the hour. We'll be back in a minute. It is 29 minutes after the hour, March 8th, all day. It is Thursday. We're going to take a little break for news. Paul Perreault is going to be in charge of that, I believe. And then when we come back, Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio will be with us. Be back. Good morning. It's 27 minutes until the top of the hour. I hope you slept good last night. I hope you feel good this morning. We're off to a good start here at the early morning late show. Brian Harden is an author, and he's the founder of Daily Audio Bible. He says many people believe in God, but they don't really have a deep relationship with him. He explains the difference.
We have a number of things in our faith culture that makes us feel like we're in a relationship with God. So it's like you believe in God and somebody gives you a gift bag, and the gift bag contains a relationship with God in it. And then you start talking about that, and then believe that the more Bible you can ingest, the more faithful you can be to your church, the more small groups you can attend, the more media you can ingest, the closer you are to God. And that just wouldn't work in any other relationship. If you just studied your spouse from afar and read things about them, you wouldn't really call that a relationship. And if you just believed in your spouse, that they exist, that they're there, then you wouldn't really be able to call that a relationship either. And if all you did was talk to your friends about your spouse, well, that wouldn't be much of a healthy relationship either. So I began to realize while writing Reframe that so many of the things, so much of the recipe, so much of the prescription that I had been following in order to get closer to God wouldn't draw me closer to pretty much anybody, much less God.
Brian, there you go, making perfect sense again. If you want to hear that full interview, go to myfaithradio.com, type in Brian Harden, H-A-R-D-I-N, or the words, "Do you know him?" All right, let me take a short break. When we come back, Kim Cattola is with us.
Let's be candid. Abortion is murder. That's the bad news. So what's the good news? This is Jim Garlow. I'm often asked a definition for the Christian view of abortion other than we're just against it. And I always appeal to Scripture because there's no waffling of terms in the Bible. The word abortion doesn't specifically appear, but the concept is clearly indicated. Psalm 139:13 says, "My frame was not hidden from you when I was made, when I was woven together." God knows us while we were being formed in the womb. In Jeremiah chapter 1, God says to Jeremiah, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born." Abortion is wrong. That's the bad news. But here's the good news I alluded to. When Jesus died on the cross, he died for all sins, including murder. There's more at jimgarlow.com. Live out your faith.
Connecting faith to life every day.
I appreciate your ministry so much. I listen to as much of it as I can during my work day in my truck while I'm driving. It's been such a wonderful help to me to stay fed and satisfied with the good things from the Word of God. Again, I say thank you. God bless you and all of you who are working to make Faith Radio work.
Thanks for growing with us on Faith Radio.
Good morning. It's 23 minutes until the top of the hour. I have Kim Cattola with us this morning on our studio line. Kim is a regular guest, host of Cradle My Heart, and she is joining us right now. Good morning, Kim.
Hey, Bill. How's it going?
Perfect timing. There you are. You know, there's always that moment of tension. I wonder if she'll be there.
I'm here.
Okay, good. All right, you wrote an interesting article, and I do want to talk about it. Elizabeth and Dan shared their story on a radio feature you did recently, and very interesting. Please tell us, our listeners, about that.
Yeah, well, I was responding to a piece in the Washington Post about how babies, the headline said, "Babies with Down Syndrome are taking center stage in the abortion fight." And it made me think about Dan Culp, who I interviewed a couple of years ago now. He and his wife adopted a baby with Down syndrome from China. And he believes that he is the first American couple, if not the first couple ever, that they are the first to adopt a special needs child from China. Generally, what happens in China is children are taken out in the woods and abandoned, and that was the case with Simon. It was winter, and he was left in the woods because he has Down syndrome. This is like
in our generation,
moaning right now.
In our world today, we hear about child abandonment in Jesus' time, right? But it's happening. And this is what was happening in China and still is happening, of course. But when Dan and Elizabeth met Simon, they said, oh, we want to adopt him. And there wasn't very much in place. And I think they were helped, if I remember the story completely, by Stephen Curtis Chapman. And he and his wife, Annie, of course, are so active with adoption and helping parents to find their forever families with children. But anyway, yeah, so Dan said his mother had raised, I think, a Down syndrome, a child who had Down syndrome who was a foster child. I'm sorry that I'm fuzzy on the details.
That's
this
okay.
Morning, but he, in other words, it was normal for him growing up that there were people present with Down syndrome. There was no different treatment of that person in terms of how, you know, they were respected and loved and cared for. And so when Dan met this child with special needs in China, he said, okay, we'll take this child home and love this child.
Mm-hmm.
And he credits his mother's acceptance of the condition in another child with giving him a heart open enough to, you know, build this into his family today. And I think that, you know, for me, when I met Dan, it was a little bit of a revelation. I don't think that I had met anyone who had adopted a child with Down syndrome. Of course, I've met people with Down syndrome, and I've met families who have children with Down syndrome. But wow, to choose that in your child seemed very radical to me. But God has been doing so many things in showing me all the different aspects of what disability means. You know, I think that the presence of a person who has a disability challenges us, doesn't it, Bill? It's like, what does this mean? We know God is sovereign. We know God is good. We know God is loving. And we know, I think it was Exodus 4, when God said, you know, when Moses complained about his speech impediment, God said, don't I make people blind and deaf? You know, I know how you are. I've made you the way I've made you. And so, and that's, to me, that's a very deep mystery of what God's purpose is in that. But I think that it has to be, I respond along the lines of when Jesus said to one who has given much, much is expected. Okay, so you have a person in front of you who has an intellectual limitation. You have a sparkling intellect. What will you do to help that person who doesn't have, you know, the intellectual capacity you have? I think that's got to be part of God's plan. It's got to be to inspire us to give.
Now, Kim, that is so, it's so hard to absorb because there's more and more now today where, because of prenatal things, they can make determinations about the health of a child, and then couples can say, well, we're not going to go through with the pregnancy. So as shocked as I am about the mother who in China will abandon her baby alone in the woods in the winter, which I can hardly say those words, the fact that we're doing abortions on children with disabilities, I don't know if that's, it's not any better, is it?
Oh, our awful winter happens in women's wombs.
Right.
It's, yeah, and it is. It's devastating to really think about it. Lives published an opinion piece that I wrote about this, and they put it up yesterday. And, you know, that compassion that abortion lovers, and I'm, you know, people will object and say no one loves abortion, but Bill, the more I work in this field, there are some who do. There are some who have put their flag on that hill, that abortion is what makes life good. Abortion allows us to handle this disability by removing it, by removing the people with it. Of course, they wouldn't say that clearly, probably, but, you know, people who advocate for abortion want us to think that it's compassionate for a family to be able to destroy that life, to spare that family that suffering. But it's such a misperception. First of all, people with Down syndrome, I mean, I just keep thinking about Karen Gaffney because she has a name. She's the woman with Down syndrome, the first woman with Down syndrome to swim the English Channel. Okay, people, she's not suffering. She's extremely talented and bright, and she has Down syndrome. Her parents were told, I think she's in her 20s now, but her parents were told she'll never tie her shoes or go to school And when she was testifying about, she's British, when she was testifying there about having Down syndrome, she said, yeah, the doctors forgot to tell them I would swim the English Channel. You know, so this outdated stereotype of, you know, people who have no communication ability, no quality of life, suffering, all it's, it certainly doesn't fit with what we're seeing in the lives of people with Down syndrome today. And even if that does fit for other conditions, again, what is our obligation if not to care for them?
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to compassionately say it's compassionate to allow women to end the suffering before the child dies, I would challenge you back. And I would say if killing, intentionally killing a child because it's disabled is not a human rights violation, I don't know what is.
I know we should reserve our anger in life for things that matter, but and this is one of those things that matter. It makes me so mad. So I need to take a break here, Kim. When we come back, I want to ask you about a very personal journey that you're on with your newborn grandson, Jonas, who has Down syndrome. So we'll continue our conversation with Kim Cotola. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Thirteen minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart. And Kim, during the break, Rebecca and I were talking about the horrific idea of a mother leaving her little baby in the woods in winter. And the whole idea of self-preservation, we don't know what this woman was told, what was at risk in her life, and where are Christians? How are Christians stepping up? What is the church doing? What can we do to make a difference?
Well, there is, in China, there is a Down syndrome adoption movement, I should say. And I think Focus on the Family has been quite active with that. So if,
that's awesome.
If that particular scenario breaks your heart, yes, I think that you could, you know, you can stand in the breach on that one. I know where I live in Georgia, there's an organization called Reese's Rainbow, and it's not an adoption agency, but they somehow, I guess they act sort of like a clearinghouse, if you will, to connect families who want to adopt children with Down syndrome with waiting children for forever families. And so this is something that, you know, I would encourage. If you get a prenatal diagnosis of Down syndrome, Bill, there are families that I understand have great hearts and just don't have the capability to handle a child with special needs. You know, but I would plead with you to think about adoption, because there are families who want these children. There are families who will love them and who will willingly have God change their lives with the presence mm-hmm. of a child that's not typical.
Yeah, Kim, I know your journey's become very personal with your new grandson. What do well-intentioned people say that are missing the mark?
Wow. Jonas has been with us. He's going to be 3 weeks old tomorrow. So I have not had, I put something up on Facebook yesterday just because, you know, it's been busy and the kids haven't been doing a lot of announcing. But I put something up writing about, you know, how proud I am of my daughter and my son-in-law, because they were offered the test, Bill. There were some indications that Jonas might have Down syndrome. And so they were offered the test to confirm that, but my daughter, Addie, declined, and she said, that wouldn't change anything I'm planning to do to bring my babies home and love them. And so, you know, we were surprised, even though we'd been given that indication, we were surprised. But there was it's disorienting. You know, there was a moment and a conversation about, well, should we tell people? Everyone wants to know, are the babies well? And, you know, so we decided, sure, we'll tell people. And when you meet Jonas, it announces itself that he has Down syndrome. You know, you can see it on his face. Mm-hmm. And so it's not, when you say it to someone who's met him, it's not surprising. But we're praising God that he's a healthy baby. And this was the thing that the pediatrician said to us. He's healthy, you know, and we saw it as such a blessing, because many families of newborns with Down syndrome are having to deal with heart surgery or GI issues or other, you know, health concerns. Jonas is a healthy boy. So, I guess we haven't gotten into hearing ignorant comments from folks. People mm-hmm. have been really celebrating with us.
That's fantastic.
On Facebook and yeah. congratulating us and saying, you know, this is a gift from God. End of story. And Bill, the best parents understand that parenting is an adventure. You know, I've never understood when someone looks at their baby and says, oh, I see her on her wedding day. No, you don't know that. You don't know what God has in store for that baby. You know what uh-huh. I mean? The best parents, I think, say, well, all right, let's find out who you are and help you to be that.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do that with a child with Down syndrome or other disabilities as well. You know, we can receive the love that this child brings with them from God's good hand into our lives.
It just prompted me to wonder if, you know, whenever I encounter someone that has a child with Down syndrome, if I would be saying something that I would wished I could take back in an effort to be as kind and loving as possible. Again, I'm just thinking out loud, which is probably, I should have done this in advance of a live radio show.
No, it's good, Bill. It's fine. I mean, I think, and I'm glad that you're not, you know, tiptoeing with me, because I'm just discovering it too. And we've had conversations about, oh, what is the correct lingo? What do we say that's not offensive to other parents, you know, who have children who have Down syndrome? And that's one thing, is just to say, you say he has Down syndrome. You don't say he is Down syndrome. He is many things, including a child with Down syndrome. But I think that one of the most important things is just to remember that it's just another fact about his life, you know. And as I said, people with Down syndrome today, the fear is his future. Will he ever have any independence? And we've met people already who tell us about a couple they know who both have Down syndrome who are married and live independently. And she said, generally what happens is they need some financial supplementing because they work, but they generally can't have a very high-paying job. But they're very independent and married and living a very good life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this may be the fear, that you've got someone who's going to be permanently dependent and will outlive you, and then how will they be provided for if parents go that far down the road in their thinking and fears? But again, Bill, you know, the dearest advice that I've read is, you know, the moms who say, well, I dialed that fear back, looked back at my baby in my arms again and realized all I have to do today is feed and diaper and love this baby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when you look at a newborn, Bill, we don't know what life holds for any of our children. We don't know. An accident could happen, God forbid, illness.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know that a perfect future awaits a child who's perfectly healthy. Again, disability, I think, helps us dial back our expectations and ramp up our reliance on God and our trust in Him. And if that's what Jonas is teaching us, well, praise God, He's here.
Mm-hmm. Kim, I've always had that. I apply that to just about everything. When I have friends who would say to me in their 30s, and they'd say something like, well, I know when I'm in my 80s, I'm going to be doing this. And I go, where do you get off thinking you're going to even live to be 80?
Right.
You know, it's no, I was
okay,
always
is promised.
I know. I was always so amazed by that kind of talk. It's nice that you have forward thinking, but what makes you think you're going to live that long? And in God's economy we have today with hope for tomorrow, and you know, we're going to continue to know God and make Him known and have plans for sure, but you can't talk with that kind of arrogance, I don't think.
You know, the saddest part of the piece in the Washington Post, and it was, you know, it's upsetting to read their coverage. It's fairly even-handed, but, you know, it's abortion providers who are standing against these laws that states are trying to pass that say you can't abort a baby simply because of a Down syndrome diagnosis, because that's not a fatal condition, okay? And those laws have been passed in several states, and they've been struck down because abortion providers, the Washington Post tells us, you know, went and sued, and then anti-abortion activists, right? So you had this picture of these compassionate people who want you to be able to kill the baby quietly before they're born, and then these crazy activists, right, yelling with signs. Well, that's just a stereotype in their coverage, and I'm very, you know, just that makes me sad. I don't even get angry about it anymore. It's mm-hmm. like you just don't get it, you know, that they're carrying water for the wrong side. But the very saddest part about their coverage is that Down syndrome is the most poorly funded major genetic condition in the United States. And as I said, we know that there are amazing accomplishments that people who have Down syndrome are making. And this is so true of every child, that they live up to our expectations, or they don't if we don't ever have any positive expectations, if we don't ever say to them, let's see what you are capable of. Mm-hmm. Let's see how far you can go. And wow, if anything, my hope and wish is that, you know, we as a culture would decide that we do want some funding for this. We would decide that it is important that all of us be patient as these children are mainstreamed in our schools. And as, you know, families are doing their level best to see that there's a great quality of life for every child, regardless of their abilities or disabilities.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kim, when Jonas swims the English Channel, I will be there with my little stadium blanket and thermos of coffee cheering him on. God bless that little boy and his brother and his and their parents and their grandma. Don't make me keep going on and on. I've got to go to break.
Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Kim. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye. 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up hour one.
Things are going.
Thanks to Kim Cotola. Awfully nice to speak to her on Thursdays. And Ben Johnson from the Acton Institute. That was a little heavy at 6:10, but I loved it, and it's good information. And if you missed it, you can learn about tariffs from Ben Johnson. Peter Kapner next. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.